Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
We're absolutely thrilled to have you here, Andrea. Welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. I wanted to kind of perhaps kick us off. Could you please introduce yourself to the audience?
I'm Andrea Miller. I've spent my career working in a number of different industries. I've worked with the UN for over a dozen years, but I also was in public health. I worked for the Centers for Disease Control, worked with some other departments of health. Actually started my career in politics, but quickly transitioned from that insanity. And I've just done a number of different things, reinvented myself a few times, Keisha, and love being able to work with an international audience and use these different skills and these different areas that I've worked in and kind of bring it together to help others. It's really that, I think, has been the central theme of all of my work.
As you said, you spent lots of time working in very multicultural environments. What I definitely picked up was kind of your work at the UN and kind of supporting their leaders and almost kind of directly working with influencing their learning and development within there. I wonder, could you speak to kind of your insight and perspectives in working within kind of such multicultural teams, whether at the UN or not, and kind of what advice would you give to others navigating environments like this?
You know, it's funny, Keisha. I'd actually studied, that was my graduate work. Before I went to the UN, I had spent about a year in South America and decided to come back and do my graduate work in international intercultural management. And I studied this and I thought I knew it. And then I got to the UN and I can still remember one day working with a coworker. She was Lebanese and I was thinking, why doesn't she understand me, what I'm trying to do here? Why? And then I stopped and paused one day and I'm like, oh, this is what we learned in class. This is what, you know, I studied and what I should know. And what it comes down to when you're working in these environments is you do have to pause. You do have to ask yourself, you know, what's this person's reference point? And, you know, how best can I work with them? But I think when it comes to working in multicultural environments, it's also about knowing yourself because you're both coming at it from different paradigms. And if you really want to be a strong leader, I think you have to own that. You have to understand that. And I have to like take that moment and say, okay, this is who she is. This is how she works best. How can I approach her to make this a really strong working relationship? And that was one of my biggest aha moments, was putting theory into practice. And when I start thinking about, you know, working with leaders, the UN is a fascinating place in the sense that it's 190 countries, more or less, give or take, but they're all working with a Western model. And they're all forcing people to work with a Western model. And everyone speaks English, and you just assume everybody understands you the same. And there's a great book that I often reference with my clients. It's called Between Us by a researcher in the Netherlands, Batia Mesquita. And she talks about the culture of emotions. And while we might be speaking the same language, we're not understanding it the same way. And we forget that. So I think the best thing I can tell people to do is really, you know, tune into their emotional intelligence, pay attention to the other person, not only what they're saying, but what they're doing, how they're reacting. And check in. I think intentionality in your relationships is just the most important thing you can have when you're working in an international environment, to take ownership of how it's going and to really know if the person is understanding you.
100%. And I find that especially with different, perhaps different cultures, people might be used to kind of saying stuff out loud in a meeting, for example, like that's perfectly fine to kind of call that out, to explain that in a meeting situation. Whereas perhaps for some cultures, it's like, no, like you agree in the meeting and then you really kind of hash it out afterwards when you're like, okay, let's have a one-on-one meeting to really dive deeper to discuss further. I wonder, cultural stereotypes, do you find that they help or hinder like navigating cultural diversity at work?
Generally speaking, it's helpful. You know, it kind of gives you a roadmap of sorts, you know, gives you a general framework. But, you know, I mean, look at both of us. You know, we're used to being in these international cities. We have international friend groups. You learn from that if you're doing your job right as a human being. So, you know, it's you change and you develop and you grow. And while, you know, I know with all my travels, people have assumptions about Americans and not all of them are good. and I try to do things a little differently because I've learned from working with others that, you know, to your point with your friends, you know, you learn to behave a little bit differently in different situations. So all that to say is we're all unique. We do take from our cultures with 100%. It's how we're raised. It's the basis of who we are. But where we go from there, that's up to us and the experiences we have. So be aware where somebody's coming from, because those cultural stereotypes will show up. But don't lock them into it. Don't expect them to be that person. Again, going back to what I said before, check in, you know, see where they're at, what they need, and then also pay attention to some of the underlying subtexts that might be from those cultures.
I find, at least from my point of view, it's really interesting having discussions kind of with you and other label mates who kind of work in different countries as well. Some of them are, you know, born and grew up in one country, but happened to kind of move and work in another. And they were talking about that part about, oh, like power dynamics is so different in their current place than when they're used to, and having to stop, take that all in, really process that, and then be like, okay, and that's how I now need to go about my work. Could you speak to perhaps kind of specific approaches that have worked for you, perhaps that kind of bring awareness of cultural biases and kind of also how to overcome them for better outcomes?
When you're working with teams, I mean, so much of it is awareness of yourself and awareness of others. And to start with that point of self-reflection. And I think the emotional intelligence is something I work with my clients in terms of trainings. It's one of the bases during the cross-cultural trainings. You know, if you don't know yourself and if you don't know the context you're operating in, you can't make those adjustments with others. And, you know, it's the same for knowing the people you're working with, just understanding where they're coming from. So that's kind of the beginning point. They're all different pieces when you're dealing with an international group in terms of paying attention to the biases, even how you speak, the language you use. I try to be very careful not to use too much jargon. I used to share an office when I was in the UN with a lovely Italian fellow, and almost every day he would ask me about some strange American expression. And I didn't even know. And it was always, well, let me look that up. But we forget, you know, we're so used to doing and saying things in a certain way that we forget. So we're biased in our own context. So a lot of it is just bringing that awareness to the forefront and then making sure, to your point earlier, you know, in terms of a meeting, okay, is that person from a culture that is a little bit quieter, a culture that is more used to doing things kind of behind the scenes? You know, do I need to have a private conversation with this person? You know, just paying attention to who they are and the clues that they're giving you. And it does make management much more complicated without question. But I also think, and, you know, the research proves this, it makes the outcomes much richer. You know, when you get all different viewpoints and from different backgrounds and perspectives, then you get a very different outcome. It's a more thoughtful one. I think I had one client who I worked with. She was a coaching colleague, and his first language was Italian again. And he would ask his questions very slowly because he was processing, he was translating in his head. And I loved it because it gave me time to think. But if somebody is a quick thinker, a quick processor, it might frustrate them. So we just have to be more aware when we go into these conversations about who's at the other end of the table, who's in the room. And I think that is always the starting place where I begin with all of my clients with all these things, is that whole piece around awareness and checking in with the people that they're working with.
No, 100%. Pivoting a little bit. So we were talking a bit about kind of multicultural environments, but also I know that you do kind of coaching as well. I wonder for you, what keeps coming up? Like, what are some common challenges that people face that keep coming up, and how do you support them in either kind of managing up or navigating career transitions or improving team management?
For the managing up piece, because I actually just wrote a blog post about one of my clients. We talk about authenticity a lot, and he's a director at a tech company, and his team loves him. He's great with his team. He's focused on his work. You know, he's a high producer, always winning awards, but he doesn't want to play the politics. He doesn't want to manage up. At least that's how he sees it. He sees it as playing the politics. And it became kind of a mixed discussion. Some of it was a values discussion in his case, because he was so adamant about not wanting to change. So, you know, do you want to be in this role? Do you want to move up and be in that role? Because that's something you do have to ask yourself. So it was some of that. And then when he finally, you know, did say, okay, I do want to do this. Okay, so how do you have to show up? Yeah, a lot of the work I do is around executive presence, you know, which there's another great book by Sylvia Ann Hewlett about it. And, you know, some of it is appearance, you know, because that's what we're judged with right away. Communication. And I forget the third letter. I'll have to think about that and get back to you. But it's knowing your boss and what they need. Because inevitably, if you're managing up, it's only because the person you're managing up to is managing up to somebody else. So what is it that they need to give to their boss in order for them to look good? You want to make them look good because they're trying to make their boss look good. And it's a process. But you want to think about your stakeholders in the process. So often it's a lot of stakeholder mapping to figure out what the needs are of the people who are influencing, you know, your ability to rise in the organization, how you're showing up. Are you prepared? That executive presence piece, you know, do you know your things six levels deep? If they're asking you a question, they don't want to wait. They don't have time. They don't have the energy. That's not their role. That's your role. You're there to just give them the answer. So it's part of that is the preparation, the strategy. There are all these different components, but it's just really thinking about what is it that the person I'm managing up to, a person's need for me, how do I need to show up, and really thinking it through. So coaching is a lot of question asking. I can tell them things, but I don't know their exact situation. So that's a big piece of it. The career transitions, that's also depending on what you mean by that. If they're transitioning within their own company, then, you know, how do we get them ready? You know, I want my clients to be able to just jump in and be successful as quickly as possible, because you don't get a second chance. You know, the judgments are being made, you know, right from the beginning. But if they're trying to decide what they want to do, then we go back to that values, you know, discussion. Sometimes, you know, there's an assessment involved, seeing what it is that they really like, what it is that they're good at, because often we forget during the course of our career. If you have the option of choosing, yeah, what kind of situation do you want to be in? So it always, I think, you know, goes back to that emotional intelligence piece, understanding yourself and where you're going to be your best is a big part of it. And I guess that last part you were talking about is managing teams. And it depends with the teams. You know, is it in real life, which is rare these days, hybrid or remote? Is it global? There are different pieces to it. But there's a lot of research around this. I'm a big fan of Gallup's work. And I actually just did an assessment a while back, that a couple of months ago, with a team, their Q12. And there's certain things that just show up. They've been doing the research for 30 years. Certain things that people need in order to feel engaged, feel good, want to keep showing up. You know, they need to know what's expected of them. They need to feel cared for. They need to have recognition. They need to have good feedback loops. The funny thing that we often forget is that they need to have friends. They need to have connection in the office. And that's a piece that I worry about now with the hybrid and remote work pieces. How do we get more intentional about creating connections? I think I told you the last time we spoke, I spent the fall in Geneva because I had all these friends from when I worked there. These are the people I care most about aside from my family. And that mattered to me to have time with them. But I met them because I worked with them. And if you're not in an office with somebody, it's a lot harder to develop those kinds of connections. But when you do, people stay longer, they're happier at work, they're more productive. So there are all these pieces that are simple but not easy to get into place. So a lot of that is working with my clients to help them with that. The one other thing that I'll say is that now with the software that's out there, it's a lot easier because there's another bit of research, Desi and Ryan's self-determination theory. People want autonomy. They want to be able to kind of take it and run with it. But you're still the boss, so you want to make sure that they're doing the job. So the software really helps. You know, you can kind of be big brother without them knowing and make sure that they're on time with their piece of the project without hovering. So you give them the autonomy, but they also need the competence to feel like they can do it on their own. So you need to make sure that they have the tools that they need to do it on their own. And then the last piece is that their puzzle is relationships also. As human beings, we just need that.
And I hear a lot about kind of you were just saying that it's almost like you need to know yourself and be self-aware, but you also need to just ask others and kind of like, okay, where are you at? What, just almost like using your words, perhaps in like different senses, but like you just need to ask. As a coach then, almost looking at the other side, what advice would you give to perhaps kind of leaders who are starting coaching for the first time so they can get the best outcome for themselves from a coaching session?
You know, the first thing that I would tell people is to talk to a few people. I mean, I'm sure they would love me, but I might not be the style somebody wants. And I think that's really probably, you know, there are a lot of great people out there, but there has to be enough of a connection that you can be honest about what's going on at work, that you feel comfortable, that you feel like this person is going to go on that journey with you and support you on that journey. So I think that's the first piece, is getting that right. And then the other thing is getting the goals in place. You know, why are you there? You know, if you're a leader, you don't have a lot of time to waste. So let's get clear about what you want to accomplish and how we're going to do that. So if you're talking to a coach, what's their process? You know, for me, I typically like to have an assessment if it's a longer coaching arrangement. That way we get a baseline of where they're at, depending on what it is they want to work on. And then we have some milestones in place and just making sure that they're achieving what they want to be achieving. And things come up without question, and it may not be, you know, just a smooth boom, 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 but it's important to know that at the end of this, I'll get you from point A to point B. And that's the thing, but there's stops in between. So you just want to make sure you're hitting those markers.
I think that's super interesting. I guess almost my last question to you, and it's something that we've talked about a lot. In your work, you talk a lot about kind of resilience and well-being. I'm sure we've gotten that from kind of discussion today, but could you share some kind of insights or perhaps strategies, perhaps that kind of you've developed for promoting resilience and well-being, both personally and kind of also professionally, especially in, you know, challenging or high pressure environments?
There's a book called The Power of Full Engagement. It's something I read before. I had, as you know, I had a couple of years where they were very stressful. I was going through a lot with my parents. They're both having end of life issues. You know, my mother had cancer, which was why I decided to leave the UN because I knew it was going to be hard. And she also had some mental health issues. So I knew it was going to be super hard. And then I wound up having some health issues and had a couple of surgeries and got hit by a car and all this stuff. So I had to really rethink what work looked like for me and how I was going to show up with enough energy to do it well, because if you don't feel well, you can't work well. And I really gave it some thought. And before I became an executive coach, I got my health coaching certification because I was concerned about my own health, quite frankly. And it's fundamental. So that's what I look at it as. You know, your well-being is fundamental to your work. If you're not feeling well, if you're tired, if something is wrong with your family, all these things impact your ability to work. And this book, The Power of Full Engagement, it was written by this man, this psychologist, a sports psychologist, Jim Lehrer. And he used to work with high-level athletes. I think there were tennis players. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Agassi. I can't remember exactly. And he realized at a certain point that the corporate athlete is very similar to the athlete, the sports athlete, and they need recovery time. They need certain things. So what I talk to my clients about and what I think about for myself are the fundamentals: eating, moving, sleeping, and connecting. These are just kind of basics that we need to run well, you know, to really be at the top of our game when we're at work. And then there's the maintenance in between, you know, stress management, really going back to what I said before, being intentional. It's not only intentional about your relationships, but intentional about yourself. And nobody's going to tell you to go take a break. That's just, I mean, particularly not in the offices today, but it makes a difference. If you're staring at your screen too long, it makes a difference. You know, you're not going to be as fresh. You're not going to be as creative. You look at the data around it. You know, most of us are better in the mornings and in the afternoons. How do you plan your schedules around that? You know, how do you know yourself so that you're performing the way you need to perform when you need to perform? So it's really, again, about planning it out a little bit. And I know it's not always possible. So you do it as much as you can, and particularly the fundamentals. If you can get that baseline in place, then the rest, I think, is a lot easier to manage. But if you're not taking care of yourself, you're going to be, at a certain point, you're just going to run out of fuel.
And I feel like, I don't know, working life isn't really conducive to all of those things. I mean, I was just kind of thinking, you go a full day from waking up and then going straight to a commute, whether it's, you know, car, bus, subway, train, tube, straight to your office. Most people that I know of kind of have lunch in their office, packed lunch that they've packed home, lunch at their desk. After that, finish work. You've not gone outside. Okay, you've gone straight back home on your method of transport, and then you're home again. I'm like, you've not really moved. You've not really kind of gone outside, seen daylight properly, I guess. And I don't know, you've got to be intentional about, okay, so when am I going to, you know, move around a bit? When am I going to, you know, take a bit of a mental rest, or, you know, sit and be intentional about eating or anything like that? So like you said, you've just got to be intentional about it.
It's interesting. You reminded me, when I first went to Geneva, you know, I came from New York, we ate at our desk. We did exactly what you said. And I get there and people are going for coffees and people are going for lunch. And I'm just like, what's wrong with these people? And then I realize it's a really nice way to live and to get your work done, because I had more energy during the day. And quite honestly, I had really strong relationships. So when something needed to get done, I could go to people. I knew who to go to because I knew what they did. I knew who they were. And they'd be willing to do it for me because they knew me as a human being and knew that I was their friend and I would help them. And there's value in these relationships and taking the time. But we've gotten so into this cycle of busyness, and particularly with COVID and the remote work. And I'm grateful for the video. You and I wouldn't be talking if it wasn't for it, but it's changed how we function and how we operate. So again, that intentionality is everything.
Yeah. I've asked all the questions I wanted to, but we do have a particular thing that we do on the Label Sessions podcast of having some sort of fun, quick fire questions at the end. What is something that you can't live without?
Aside from my coffee, it's really my family and my friends. I mean, that really, when my mom got sick and I went through that 5-year period, it really was a little late in coming, but it really was the aha moment of this is what it's all about. Relationships are 100% what this is all about. So yeah, the people that I love in my life, that's it.
Wonderful. And it's so important as well. So yeah, I guess question number two, what's your music taste like?
I think the word eclectic comes to mind. So I've lived in a bunch of places and somewhat speak a couple of languages. So I have Latin music, I have French music, I have some really bad pop for when I go to the gym because I need a beat when I go to the gym, classical to work with, I have opera because my aunt introduced me to it years ago and I fell in love with the experience. I have country, I have R&B, soul, I have almost everything, except it's probably easier to say what I don't have, which is probably like heavy metal and some rap music. But, you know, I love music.
Next question. Do you have a work routine?
I do. I had to implement one, and I have to admit, with my recent AI fascination, it's gone a little fuzzy at times because I go down the rabbit hole. But I do. I do start my day with some sort of physical activity and then into work. But I do have to block out time. It's as a solopreneur, you know, working on my own, I have to block time for certain things and making sure that I'm doing what I need to do to make my business operate and to make sure I'm operating. So, yeah. Do you want to know it or is this good enough? I have to do a certain amount of writing. So, and I'm clearer in the morning usually, so I tend to do the actual writing in the morning and then the editing in the evening so I don't have to be quite as clever, I guess, for that. So there are a couple of mornings that I have that booked off. Then a couple of mornings and afternoons for client visits, because like you, I have different people in different time zones and sometimes into the evenings, depending on where I'm at. And then there's some intentional study time for me to make sure that I'm putting in the work to stay current on certain things. And then client calls, making sure I'm, you know, touching base. And then like I have trainings coming up with a couple of clients. So I have to do the planning and the execution of that. So it's really, you know, setting up my days so that I'm working when I'm at my most effective on certain things. And yeah, just making sure the other things where I don't need as much brain power, those are more towards the afternoon, evening when I start running out of fuel. So
great. I guess kind of next question. Do you what makes someone a good traveling companion?
I have been known to travel off the beaten path and to do some rather unusual things in my travels. So they have to, and I do like to plan it that way, like to do things like I used to, when I was in Europe, I didn't like to stay in hotels. I would go to the Agriturismos or the Chambre de, you know, I'd go to where people actually lived. And I have been to enough churches at this point and probably almost more than enough museums. It'd have to be kind of an interesting kind of museum. So I like to actually engage in what's going on locally. Like I go to supermarkets, I sit in cafes, I talk to people. Yeah, I want to experience life there. So it has to be somebody who is either willing to travel a little differently and experience life a little differently, or is independent and willing to let me just kind of go off and do that and meet up later for a drink or dinner. So, but yeah, somebody a little more flexible, I guess, is the key.
I've reached the last two questions to ask you. The first one being kind of, so Label Sessions is all about kind of the best advice for the most interesting people. So what is the best advice that you've ever been given?
You know, the thing that comes to mind, and I'm not sure if this is the best advice, but it's something that's kind of stuck with me for a really long time. Don't become good at things you don't like doing. And I was very good at a lot of things that I didn't enjoy as much. I found ways to enjoy them. Like for example, I ran the budget for my department. Yeah, I'm very good with numbers. But the true joy I got out of it was going down to finance and talking to the people there and just having the relationships. And that is kind of how I'm wired. So now I'm doing what I enjoy, and it's a very different experience. So, you know, if you can find what you love and really go all in.
I really like that piece of advice. With that, we've reached the last question I want to ask you. It's a question that we ask to every single guest here on the podcast with a variety of answers, really. But yeah, Andrea, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
I would give myself 6.5. I know I'm a little unusual. I've lived an unusual life. But, you know, you can put me in an office and, you know, I appear relatively normal. But my perspectives, how I've kind of gotten to this place are definitely unusual. And I value it. But, yeah, some people might say it's a little weird, you know, going off and traveling to these places and choosing to quit jobs to do it and, you know, reinventing myself. And then, you know, my Bronx childhood was a little bit unusual. And here's a fun fact you didn't know, Keisha. I almost became a professional bowler when I was young. You know, I'm just a little weird and I like it.
Wow, another universe. We could have, you know, the expert in bowling. Andrea, thank you so much for your time, taking time out of your day to kind of share the little tidbits of really precious advice that you can give to kind of us and our audiences and clients. I certainly learned a lot, and it's a lot to kind of think about and to have some self-reflection on. And I just want to say thank you.
Well, it was absolutely my pleasure. I really, I love speaking with you and I really enjoyed this. So thank you.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.